We're talking about the most shocking Saturday Night Live moments, and this is from Cheat Sheet, TV Cheap Sheet. Many of these moments, I remember all of them. So, which seems like a shock to me. These are moments that received lots of complaints from viewers and certain organizations. So what are some of your, it's 312-981-7200. I want to talk about these shocking moments from SNL, but I also want to talk about your favorite moments from SNL. If you've got some favorite characters or some favorite sketches, memorable moments from SNL that you remember watching and going, oh my God, that was funny, or that was shocking, or that was weird. So really memorable moments from, 42 years of SNL. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. So I was mentioning that this will be the 16th season for Kenan Thompson. And do you know whose record he broke with that? Daryl Hammond. I think that Daryl Hammond was third, because I think Tim Meadows was second. Tim Meadows, I believe. I might be right. But the weird thing is Daryl Hammond is still there. He's not a cast member anymore. He's the announcer after Don Pardo passed. Daryl Hammond took over. So Daryl Hammond is still there. So technically, Daryl Hammond has been a part of Saturday Night Live for longer than any cast member ever. Even though he's not a cast member anymore, he's an announcer. So, yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in. So, shocking Saturday Night Live moments. Now, we all know that there are moments when SNL, has caused a stir. And here are some of them, some of these moments. Using Down syndrome as a punchline. I remember this episode. This was in 2007. Rainn Wilson was the host of an episode of SNL that included a sketch with a group of old friends who are reminiscing about the song Danny's Song and what it means to them. Dan, can you... I can't remember what that song sounds like. Can you pull that one up? Because the sketch that this is a sketch that was a regular sketch that they did. They would have guys in a bar, they would all sing along to a song that was either playing. It was playing on the jukebox. They're in a bar. They're having some beers, and they're singing along a song and giving each other, telling each other memories about what this song reminds them of. And then the memories get weirder and crazier. And we're just insane as they go on, but they finish telling the story just in time so that they can all sing the chorus together. That was the setup. They did it 6-7 times, I think, and it was always a pretty funny sketch because of the stupid memories that get weirder and crazier. Now, what is? I don't remember Danny's song. That's right.
In the morning when I rise, bring a tear of joy to my eyes and tell me everything's gonna be alright.
Right, I forgot that's what the name of this song was. Who does this song, man?
Loggins and Messina.
Oh, it's Loggins and Messina, that's right. So, they're singing along with the song, and the memories that the friends discuss are deliberately bizarre, including stories that involve being bitten on the penis or starting a fire. However, the character played by Bill Hader raised eyebrows when he recalled the first time he heard Danny's song. He says, "It was so great. It was the first day I ever thought to myself, just I have a dad, not I have a dad with Down syndrome." So that was the line that he says, and as reported by the Times, the sketch led to the National Down Syndrome Society sending a letter to NBC executives criticizing the sketch. "We request that you consider issuing a network policy that would prohibit and prevent the airing of programming with comments using Down syndrome or other intellectual disabilities as a punchline in the future. We invite you and NBC to produce programming that tells the true story about Down syndrome and intellectual disabilities and help us break down stereotypes and educate the public." I do remember watching that sketch and going, ooh, during that line, I was like, ooh, that's not very funny. And subsequent reruns of the Rainn Wilson episode, when they do rerun, they've cut that sketch. So that's going to be the case with a lot of the stuff on this list that we're talking about, things that cause controversy. They don't show anymore during reruns, or they've never shown the episode ever again. That's just the case. It's with Lorne Michaels. When Lorne Michaels makes a decision, it usually sticks. And if he doesn't want it seen again by the public, it won't be seen again by the public. So how about this one? Jesus goes on a killing spree. What would it look like if Quentin Tarantino made a revenge movie about Jesus Christ? That's the premise, the Saturday Night Live sketch that ran in 2013 titled Jesus Uncrossed with a silent D, like Django. But they put the silent D in front of it. So it's Jesus Uncrossed, in a tribute to Tarantino's Django Unchained. The sketch stars Christoph Waltz and features scenes of over-the-top violence as Jesus take revenge on the Romans who want to crucify him. Not surprisingly, some religious groups took offense to this ultra-violent portrayal of Jesus, including the Council on American-Islamic Relations, which released the following statement. Such misrepresentation of what Jesus, peace be upon him, stands for is extremely offensive to Muslims and to those who believe in his message. While we understand the use of shocking imagery and bizarre juxtaposition to provoke a humorous response, we believe such a distasteful portrayal of a religious figure revered by billions of Muslims and Christians worldwide crosses the comedic line. We strongly support free speech for all, but one would hope that common decency and respect for the beliefs of others would help avoid such unfortunate depictions. Okay, fair enough. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. And the fact that it was Christoph Waltz in that, I mean, obviously because he's in, you know, Tarantino's last three movies have featured Christoph Waltz. It was perfect casting. It was I thought it was really funny. But I can understand you when you start messing with religion. You know, that's a hard thing, man. When you're doing satirical stuff involving people's religions, people take that very personally, as they should. But I don't know. Made me laugh. Dan, did you see that one?
No, I didn't get a chance.
Jesus
to see
Unchained.
It.
It's like a perfect. The thing is, it's like a perfect parody of Tarantino. Like blood flying everywhere, and they have to beep out the F word and all that. You know, so it's like if you're a Tarantino fan and you understand the stuff that you find, the cliches that are in every single Tarantino movie, I think you'd get a kick out of it. And we're talking about memorable moments right now, shocking moments and memorable moments, your favorite stuff. Here's Lulu on WGN. Hi, Lulu.
Hey, how are you? I am a viewer of the original cast, and then I've been sporadic through the years.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the things that I remember for its time was not shocking, but when Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin did their parody of like a Crossfire show.
Yeah, Point Counterpoint.
Oh, okay, right. And yeah. He called her an ignorant slut. Now, that was something you just didn't hear on TV. And
no.
Then the memorable moments, I mean, Gilda Radner, I mean, who could say, I mean, Lisa Loebner, Rosanna Dana,
yeah.
The crazy girl in the brownie outfit, and Steve Martin and Bill Murray doing something. So they just kept saying, what the hell is that?
Yeah. Oh yeah, when they're looking at the hey, what the hell is that thing? And that's one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite bits from that era. It's just,
yeah, it's like, but it made you laugh, and it was like, how silly.
Very funny.
And
yeah,
and just, I mean, there's so many, but I kind of tune in every once in a while. Right now, I don't have cable, so I can't get it at all.
Yeah,
but, I like Stefan.
Yeah, Stefan's not on. Bill Hader's not on the show anymore. So no more Stefan.
And, you know, Seth Meyers and Jimmy Fallon, I saw a little bit of him, but, you know, not like I saw the originals.
Right, right. Well, it was. Yeah. Hey, Lulu, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Take care. The thing about, and the reason why people have such rose-colored glasses about the original cast is because it was nothing like it on TV ever before. They were breaking ground. Nothing had ever been like Saturday Night Live. Like Dan Aykroyd saying, Jane, you ignorant slut, was like, what? That kind of stuff was not said in the 70s on TV. Now you can say whatever the hell you want on TV. But they broke ground on a lot of stuff. They pushed the envelope as far as you could at that time in the 70s. And it was, you know, at that time in the 70s, only like All in the Family was doing, you know, stuff that was, everything else was sort of like Happy Days was on and all this other stuff. And, you know, So yeah, they were breaking all kinds of rules. So, all right, we got a break here. We got a break, and we'll come back and we'll talk more SNL, more shocking moments from SNL, and more memorable. 312-981-7200.
You'll never be in doubt. That's what it's all about. You can't take me for granted and smile.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, get your request in, one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. Mike, our good buddy, requesting some Sly and the Family Stone, If You Want Me to Stay. We are talking about shocking moments from SNL, and then just some Saturday Night Live memories in general. Before that, I was just, you know, Dan, I was scrolling around on the old IMDb. And I just like to just say it's Steve Guttenberg's 59th birthday today. So we
happy birthday. Many happy returns, Steve Guttenberg.
Happy birthday to Steve Guttenberg, 59 today. Okay, just thought I'd share that with everybody. All right, let's get back to the phones. Here's Patrick on WGN. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Nick. Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
Well, Steve Guttenberg's first birthday, huh?
Yeah.
We probably get a good shot. They had a movie he did on Sci-Fi, I think it's called Lavalantula, about fire-breathing tarantulas.
Oh, good.
So he's in it, and Michael, what's his name, Michael, is it Michael Winslow? They're both in it. Of course, they're hamming it up. But
Anyway,
getting to the Saturday Night Live thing. I think Dan said it's on the list. Janet O'Connor.
Yeah.
And, you know, infamously ripping up that picture of the Pope.
Yeah.
You know, goes down in history.
It is. It's number four on the list. And I mean, I vividly remember watching that live. I remember I was sitting on the couch, and I was with my girlfriend at the time. And when she did it, I was just like, after she did it, I was just kind of stunned. And I went, did she just do what I think? Did she just tear up a picture of the Pope and say, fight the real enemy? What? And I remember just being completely stunned. And the other thing about it was that after she did it, there was no applause. You know, there was like no, because normally when a musical artist finishes their performance, there's applause. You know, you could hear a pin drop in that studio, like crazy.
Yeah, it was the same thing when we were watching it. Everybody's jaws just kind of like hit the floor, like
everything.
You know, that was insane. You know, especially if you're Catholic. So but you know, you're talking about how with the whole Jesus thing with the skit they did. It's insane how, like, they've had such a fit over, I don't know if they had as much of a fit over Family Guy when they make fun of Jesus, or the fact that, like, you know, Robot Chicken actually did a parody of Kill Bill with Jesus going after the Easter Bunny.
It's just, but you know how it is. You know how it is, though, Patrick. I mean, you're messing with somebody's religion. It's a very personal thing. People, it's very important to them. So, you know, if you're gonna do any kind of religious satire, be prepared. I mean, listen, Monty Python's Life of Brian was picketed. People boycotted the movie. It made worldwide news. A lot of theaters wouldn't show it, and it doesn't make any sense, because Jesus is portrayed in that movie, and it's a very accurate portrayal, according to the Bible, of the Sermon on the Mount. That's the only time that Jesus is in the movie, and he's saying the Sermon on the Mount, and it's the only time. But people went completely insane. What they didn't understand, that movie was a satire of religion, of religious epics movies. That's what it was. Right. I mean, that's, you know, so.
It's just silly, you know.
Yeah.
But also, my favorite skit, it's this one when I was a kid. There's a couple. There's one where Dan Aykroyd was a toy maker and he pulled out the bag of glass.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Norman Mainway. He was on the show, and Jane Curtin was Joan Face. He could, like, oh, yeah, I'm wearing a tie. I could smother myself with a tie. And then the tie goes into his mouth. It's like, my favorite of she goes, explain bag of glass. That's a good one. But my favorite is the Halloween costume that Mainway Products put out, which was Invisible Pedestrian.
Oh, I forgot about that one. What I was thinking about was David Carradine hosted the show, and it was, he did a bit with Kung Fu. It was a Christmas episode.
Right.
And it was him and Clark Shea King, and the tagline was, Bruce Lee is back, but now he's black. And it was Eddie Murphy as Bruce Lee.
Oh, that's cool. That's funny.
Thankful Christmas.
Very cool. All right, I got to run. Patrick, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Take care, buddy. All right, we got to take a break here. We got the news coming up, and then more shocking moments from SNL. Yes, the Sinead O'Connor one is clearly on the list because that was unbelievably shocking. And more favorite SNL bits and stuff like that. 312-981-7200. News is next. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man. One artist, three songs. Requests in 312-981-7200. Mike requests Sly and the Family Stone. That's Music Lover. And we're back. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here. Hi. Here till 5 a.m. every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. And we are talking about SNL. Some of the most shocking moments. Website put together a list of the 15 most shocking SNL moments in history. So we're talking about shocking moments and then memorable moments and some of your favorite SNL stuff. We're just talking SNL in general and remembering some of the weird stuff that happened on the show. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. That's 847 area code text in the SNL skit. You like it a juice? The juice is good from the mid-90s is hilarious. Yeah, very weird. That was during the Rob Schneider, Adam Sandler, Chris Farley, David Spade years. When a lot of people in the early 90s, when those seasons were happening, thought those were some of the years with the show was at its most juvenile. And that's absolutely true. Not to say that it wasn't funny, but, the humor, the predominant, tone of those seasons was lowbrow. No question about it. And then you had like Phil Hartman in there who was the best. Steve says, I've always loved the short film when Michael Jordan as River Baines, the first black player on the Harlem Globetrotters. That was one of the funniest things. Dan, you remember that one?
I don't.
It's so hilarious because all the Harlem Globetrotters, they're all white guys. And the very first time, and he was the first black Harlem Globetrotter, clearly just schooled everybody. They were trying to do tricks on Michael Jordan. That, by the way, that episode from 1991, it was the season opener of 1991. God, I am a loser that I know the exact season episode. Season one, you know, the 1991 season with Michael Jordan as the host and P.E. as the musical guest was one of the best season openers of all time. And that is a classic episode because that also features not only Public Enemy just killing it at the time. But Michael Jordan and doing the daily affirmation with Stuart Smalley, where he starts to break. He's got to look in the mirror and do the daily affirmation. It was so funny. That also was the episode where Jesse Jackson came on Weekend Update and did Green Eggs and Ham, which is one of the greatest things ever. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Performing Green Eggs and Ham. That was great. That was great. Rod, you remember that?
Oh, gosh, yes. The Smalley bit.
Ugh.
I'm on the floor laughing because he Jordan was trying so hard not to lose it.
Oh, I know. It was classic. And that was a very strong episode. They had They also had the guys, the Bears, the Chicago Superfans.
Oh, the Superfans.
They did one of those, and that's when they were in the hula outfits at the end, and they had Michael Jordan dancing around with a hula skirt on.
The whole episode.
It was great. The whole episode was great. I mean, from the musical guest all the way through to the cameo by Jesse Jackson, that was one of the best episodes ever. Robert says, what about when Eddie Murphy did White Like Me? That was very controversial at the time. That is brilliant. Do you guys remember White Like Me?
Yep. Where he goes into makeup and he dressed up as a white guy.
And
he goes into a bank. He goes into the store.
He goes into the store and he's like, I'm praying for this newspaper.
Yeah.
Go ahead, take it.
Take it.
And then when the last black person gets off the bus and then they bring out food and drinks and they're having a party. That was brilliant. Brilliant. And it still holds up today. You know, another Eddie Murphy bit that I loved. Dan, you guys remember when he I can't remember the character's name, but they did a profile of him and he was a poet, but he was in prison. You guys remember that?
Killed my landlord.
C-I-L-L, my landlord.
Yes. And he's close up. It's close up on him, like looking through the bars.
It's hilarious. Yeah. Dan, can you see if you can find Kill My Landlord? It was
the
unbelievably
bits with
funny.
Murphy were just...
Well, he dominated when he was on that show. Yeah. I mean, it was one of the weaker times of the series. You know, it was like it was only a couple of years after all the regulars had left, And, you know, they had a disastrous season in 1980, and then they revamped and brought in a whole bunch of people. And Eddie Murphy was just, like, 19 when they brought him in. And he started out, he just started out as, like, a supporting player. Mm-hmm. And then, like, he took off.
He exploded.
And he dominated. He dominated that show. He dominated.
Yeah. Your close personal friend, Norm MacDonald, shared an interesting story about Eddie when they were doing the 40th anniversary. And he was trying to get him to participate in a bit. But the thing that struck me the most when he was telling the story over Twitter was how, like, when he walked into the room, like, it stopped. Yeah. He's like, it was like watching Muhammad Ali in his prime walk into a room. Just everybody, all conversation stopped, all eyes turned towards him because of the impact he had on that show.
Oh, he it was at a time when that show was at an all-time low. Like, no, I was the only person watching it. You know, and he just came in. He breathed new life into it. I mean, in him and Piscopo,
Sammy, the Frank Sinatra,
and Stevie Wonder,
Stevie Wonder bit.
It was classic.
Ebony and Ivory.
Yep.
Oh, God,
it's classic stuff.
Hilarious.
Here is Steve in Galesburg on WGN. Hey, Steve.
I'm going back to when we were kids, but when Gene Curtin tore her blouse open, we had to see a bra at 12. That was shocking.
Yeah.
And one of my favorites is Belushi doing Joe Cocker.
Well, I mean, that bit goes all the way back to Lemmings, the National Lampoon stage show, Lemmings. It was the first time he debuted that when he was working for National Lampoon.
Oh.
And I'll tell you, not only was it great, was it a great imitation, but do you remember when he did it next to Cocker? When Cocker was on the show and Belushi was...
Yeah, he was the musical guest.
It was so uncomfortable. It just was very, very uncomfortable. It was classic. Classic stuff. So.
And can I toss one more in?
Yeah.
My wife's favorite, Justin Timberlake and Jimmy Fallon, Cock in a Box.
Yeah, that's one of the best, too. All right, thank you. Thank you, Steve. Right. Take care. All right.
Galesburg, my wife's hometown.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
How
about Gumby, damn it?
Yeah, Gumby was great. All of his stuff, when they assassinated Buckwheat because he didn't want to be the character anymore, so they killed off Buckwheat. Classic. I mean, he everything he did on that show, the James Brown hot tub.
Yep.
I mean, come on. He was, you know, it was he single-handedly brought that show back from the brink. There's no question about it. And even Lorne Michaels left the show.
That's right.
Dick Ebersol was producing those years. All right. Let's see. We got some text coming in. 262 area code. I really enjoyed the Glengarry Glen Christmas with Baldwin. That is hilarious. Hilarious. This is from, I don't know, 4 years ago? No, because Polar was still on and Dratch was still on. So it was probably... longer than that, probably 6-7 years ago. Do you know the sketch that I'm talking about, the Glengarry Christmas sketch they did?
I vaguely remember it. Again, this is from the time when I'm just watching stuff on YouTube.
It was a takeoff on his one scene, his legendary scene in Glengarry Glen Ross, where he comes in from the home office from the North Pole.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And the elves aren't making the toys fast enough.
Yep.
So he comes down and gives basically the Glengarry Glen Ross speech. And it's the best part of this, the whole best part. Well, first of all, the sketch is great. It's hilarious. But the best part is when he does it's ABC. You know, in the movie, he's ABC, always be closing. A, right. Always B, C, closing. Always B, closing. In the sketch, it was always be cobbling.
Yeah.
And so, but he screwed up because he went back to, he said, and it's written on the blackboard right there. He turns the blackboard over and it says, always be cobbling. And he's like, A, B, C, always be closing. A, always B, B, C, cobbling, always be cobbling. And then they cut to Seth Meyers, who's got it. He's got the next line, and Seth Meyers is losing it because he went back and said this thing. And Baldwin breaks too. And Baldwin very rarely breaks. So yeah, that's a great one. Jay in Ohio says Dan Aykroyd playing Julia Child, Blood Everywhere, classic. Oh, I've cut the Dickens out of my finger, and blood shooting up all over the place.
Who were the actors, the two cast members who did they would be like night watchmen? And
that was Billy Crystal and Christopher Guest.
Okay,
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
You know, when you take a stapler and you staple your tongue to the table. I hate when that happens. Yeah. That was Billy Crystal and Christopher Guest. Season. They were only on one season.
That was it?
Yeah, one season. 85 or 86 was their season, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Oh, God, I'm a geek. Dan, were you able to find Kill My Landlord?
No, unfortunately, they don't have
that. They took it down? Yeah. Because you know, some of those things are very, very hard to find. Let's see. Another text coming in. We got phone calls, too. Here's another controversial, shocking moment. In 2009, Tiger Woods was revealed to who was cheating on his then-wife. Not surprisingly, Saturday Night Live featured a sketch about the scandal, and in the sketch, Kenan Thompson played Tiger Woods. Blake Lively played his wife. As Wood admits to various failings in his marriage, it becomes apparent that Nordgren is physically assaulting him off-screen. The sketch was criticized from some commentators for trivializing domestic violence, and to make things worse, the musical guest of that episode was Rihanna, a well-known survivor of domestic violence at the hands of former boyfriend Chris Brown. I thought that sketch was funny too. I laughed at it. I thought it was funny because Kenan Thompson makes me laugh.
And he's very good.
Also, Blake Lively. That's the episode featuring one of the greatest sketches in the history of Saturday Night Live ever. In the history of Saturday Night Live, the fantastic potato chip sketch. That was the potato chip sketch.
I'm gonna have to go back and watch.
Well, I don't know what to say. It's very weird, Raj. It's Will Forte wrote it, and it's Will Forte and Jason Sudeikis, and Jason Sudeikis plays this. They're both like for some reason Southern gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Sudeikis is dressed up. He looks like Colonel Sanders. He's got
Are they on the porch?
No,
is that the one where they're
no.
on the
No, oh, you're okay. thinking of Colonel Angus.
Yes.
Yeah, which right, Tina right. Fey wrote that sketch. That's one of the silliest and most big... Colonel Angus is what they keep calling him. I can't wait for Colonel Angus. Christopher, that's Christopher Walken, man.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and Tina Fey wrote that. One of the most intellectual, brilliant women on the planet, and she wrote that damn sketch.
She went there.
Yeah. Oh, my God. No, but the potato chip sketch is Will Forte is interviewing for a job at NASA, and for some reason they're Southern guys, and Will Forte is interviewing him and says, "Don't eat any of my potato chips. I've got my potato chips here. Don't eat my potato chips." So he leaves the room. Jason Sudeikis eats a potato chip. Forte comes back in and counts the potato chips and then calls in his secretary, played by Blake Lively, and they find out that he did indeed, Jason Sudeikis ate the potato chip, and they just go off on him for stealing the potato chip. And it's this sketch, and I remember vividly watching it with my ex-wife, Heather. We're sitting on the couch. And like we were laughing our asses off, and I remember looking when the sketch was over. I was like, "That was what the hell was that? What?" Because it's one of those sketches that you see on SNL. When it's over, you just kind of look around and go, "Did what happened there?" It's one of my favorite sketches of all time. And there have been interviews that Sudeikis and Will Forte have done analyzing that sketch. It's become like it's become legendary.
Oh, I'm going to have to try to find.
Yeah, it's out there. I think it is
available.
Yeah, it's available. You can get that one. Just go to the YouTubes or go to the Googles and type in SNL potato chip, and that's it. Potato chip sketch, and it'll pop up. All right, we have to break here. We got weather and we got traffic, and then more shocking moments from SNL and your favorite SNL stories. I have no problem hearing three Huey Lewis songs. Triple Play Thursday. Margaret in Carbondale. I wonder if Margaret saw the cloud and the moon and all that stuff on Monday.
If it's the same Margaret who I think it is? Yeah, she did.
Okay. Huey Lewis in the news, hip to be square.
She's a frequent contributor out of context, and she's been signing off on her emails. Margaret, waiting for the eclipse in Carbondale.
Okay.
And the last one was waiting for the next eclipse in 2024.
By the way, do you know when that occurs? On Esmeralda's birthday.
The next eclipse?
Really? Yeah.
Is she planning on being there?
I would hope so. It's April 8th, 2024. And that's Esmeralda's birthday. And how old would she be at that point? Because she's, what, is she 33 now?
34, I think.
She's 34? Yeah, because you guys are a year apart, right?
Right.
And you're going to be 35 in November.
I'll be 36.
You'll be 36 in November. Oh, okay. I'm all screwed
that's
up.
Right.
God, you young whippersnappers.
Yeah.
So she's 34. So into what? How many years is that away? It's 7 years. So she'll be 41.
41.
So on her 41st birthday will be the next... the next eclipse. All right. Let's see. 312-981-7200. We're talking about shocking moments from SNL and plenty more to talk about in that department. But let's talk with Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Nick. Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, 1993, I was lucky enough to go to a Saturday Night Live, a full dress rehearsal, which started about 8 o'clock on Saturday.
Yep.
And Chili Peppers was the band, and Roseanne was the host. We sat, you know, in front of the stage looking straight at the Chili Peppers. Roseanne, of course, was to our right.
Yeah.
But, you know, to see what they shoehorn in probably half, you know, half the size of a basketball court, they have monitors showing the commercials that would be playing, for those who didn't go, who've never been there, they're showing the commercials that are playing, sceneries moving around, and it is, what you don't see is far more captivating than the actual show, just getting it all to work. And that was the same one to the very far left of the stage, because everyone in the audience, you don't always have a vantage point. You sometimes you can't see anything.
Right. Right.
And to the very far left, that was where Spade was the receptionist for everyone wanted to see Dick Clark, and Roseanne was there, of course.
Yeah.
And Phil Hartman was Jesus.
Right.
Listen, friend.
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty funny. And that was the one with Coffee Talk where Madonna was Roseanne's.
Madonna's mother. That's cool.
Yeah, and we're watching that. We were staying at the Central Park Sheraton at that time. We went back to the hotel for something to eat after the dress rehearsal. So it was literally, this is what the show's going to look like, but they left off one thing. That's when Barbara Streisand came out, and they're like, she didn't do that for the dress, but
right.
She did it for the live
show.
Well, like,
you know what? They did it. They didn't want Mike Myers and Roseanne and Madonna to know.
They were clearly shocked when Barbara showed up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Barbara Streisand walks out. Those reactions, if you watch that episode, those reactions on Madonna and Roseanne and Mike Myers are real because they didn't know she was there. And then Barbara Streisand walks out and they almost have a heart attack.
They definitely did not see it coming.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's a cool experience.
You mentioned the coconut bra thing with Jordan.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, it's not going to be a repeat or a three-peat, minimum eight-peat.
Right.
So you think of if they could have beaten Houston, it would have been an eight-peat. So
that's right.
It was clearly a reach. But,
that was that was Robert Smigel, by the way.
Yeah, Robert Smigel, minimum eight-peat.
Eight-peat.
And you know, it's always funny when you think Eddie Murphy, like, hey, Opie Cunningham, when he's Floyd the Barber, Opie Cunningham, when I was cutting your hair, I wanted to slit your throat.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Steve.
So, Nick, real fast. Yeah. You know, when you have all these retrospectives on Saturday Night Live, I know Belushi and Jane Curran did get along, but I've never heard her talk about the show at all. Like when they would, you know, bring out Lorraine Newman, you know, and Garrett Morris to a certain extent and some of the other players. I mean, I know Belushi didn't think any women were funny, and Aykroyd always said, when he goes, boy, these girls are pretty funny, and Aykroyd goes, well, of course they are. So, yeah, but Jane Curran, I haven't heard her reminisce at all about
Well, if there was a few years ago, they did a special called The Ladies of SNL. Jane Curtin was brought back for it, and she did talk about it. They did some behind the scenes stuff.
I missed that.
Yeah, it was on the Ladies of SNL. You can find that. I'm sure it was from like 5-6 years ago. They did it. They brought everybody back from. I mean, you know, Jane Curtin was there. Lorraine Newman was there. You know, Molly Shannon and Tina Fey. All of them came back for that. It was great.
Yeah, it's interesting. David Spade. You know, it's nice that he had. You know, because him and Farley, of course, were buds. But.
Yeah.
You know, like John Cryer doesn't talk about Charlie Sheen. Spade had nothing good or bad to say about Farley because he, you know, he's probably really moved by what happened to Chris.
Well, yeah.
And you think of the music things, you know, Belushi and the band Fear, Elvis Costello's rant, and of course when Norm MacDonald swore.
Right.
That kind of.
Well, that both of those musical things that you just mentioned, Fear and Elvis Costello, are both on the list.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. All right, Steve. Thanks, man.
You're hitting home, man. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Take care. There you go. I'd love to go to a dress rehearsal. I'd love to go to a taping of SNL. Let's see. Here's another shocking moment. When a Weekend Update segment mocked the blind in this skit, Fred Armisen portrayed then-New York Mayor David Paterson as a bumbling idiot who had difficulty seeing when a chart is being held upside down. The only problem is Paterson actually is legally blind, and the skit seemed to mock his disability and suggest that visually impaired people have trouble performing simple tasks. So they did, the governor's communication director at the time, Reza B. Heller, did send a note to SNL through the New York Times explaining her displeasure. But here's the weird thing. First of all, again, it was funny, and Fred Armisen was hilarious. Most of that sketch was about David Paterson, not so much about like his disability or his not being able to see, but his disdain for New Jersey. That was what most every single punchline was making fun of New Jersey. But I guess they must have forgiven him because Paterson showed up and sat next to Fred Armisen on the Weekend Update stage and did the bit with him, with Fred Armisen dressed up as Patterson.
What, the following week?
Oh, no, this is because it was a running gag.
They had done it for a few
months at this point, and then finally Patterson showed up, and he got a massive response. And what did Patterson do? He went along with it, kind of said that he wasn't happy about the fact that he was making fun of his eyesight, but what did he do? Made fun of New Jersey, like the real Patterson. The sketch ended with him slamming New Jersey, so it was very funny. Next one on the list is Jenny Slate drops an F-bomb. Now, this is amazing because Jenny Slate, who has gone on to be this really wonderful actress and filmmaker, who has carved out a really great career for herself, doing great work on stuff like Parks and Recreation and Girls. She does a lot of voiceover work. She's been in a bunch of movies. She's currently in a movie called Landline. Her first show ever, she dropped the F-bomb. On her first sketch, first show ever, she dropped the F-bomb, was fired at the end of the season.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, didn't Rocket?
Charles Rocket, yes, dropped the F-bomb as well. Yes, yes, absolutely. Okay, we got a break here because we have the news coming up, and then more. What the Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of Trib Tower. And we're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich follows this show at 5 with the opening bell. And Andrea and Dave will be steering the boat for the Steve Cochran show this morning after 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're talking about shocking moments from SNL, your favorite moments, most memorable moments from SNL. That's Triple Play Thursday is still in effect. Yeah, Margaret in Carbondale, Huey Lewis in the news, and that's Heart of Rock and Rolls. Let's get back to some of these SNL things. Peter in Decatur says, this is a vague memory from the early days. Jack Burns was the host. In one of the sketches, he said something pissed him off, and I remember the cast in the sketch visually reacting to the words pissed off, and since it wasn't in the script, and it looks like their faces were saying, what did he say? Yeah, back in those days, that's you couldn't say that.
Jack Burns did the, with Avery Shriver.
Avery Shriver, Shriver.
Cab driver bit, yeah.
Cab driver sketch. And he was the host. He hosted it solo, and I want to say it was in 77, maybe? 76 or 77 when he hosted solo. All right, here's another one of these shocking moments. Samuel L. Jackson curses. There's a shock. I remember this. Of course, I remember because I watched it. And it was the actor was doing a sketch with Kenan Thompson. And it was an awkward moment on live television. Some say they heard the actor say the full F word. Some say he only said fuh. Either way, the actor was supposed to start saying the curse word only to get interrupted by Thompson. Their timing was off, and instead the actor almost says the curse word uninterrupted. When Jackson was later asked about what happened, he put the blame entirely on the Saturday Night Live cast member. I'm just saying, Jackson told Jimmy Kimmel, I'm used to working with professionals that know their lines, even ones that are written on cue cards in front of you. Well, way to throw Kenan under the bus, man. That, by the way, do you know what that sketch was, Dan?
What's up with that?
What's up with that? One of the greatest sketches in the history of television history. I'm telling you, man, that those sketches, I don't care. I don't care how stupid they are. I don't understand why I laugh. Every single time they did What's Up With That, I was on the floor laughing every time. I remember the very first one they did. It was, I want to say it was Gerard Butler was the host. Gerard Butler, it was the host. They did the first time they ever did What's Up With That. And I'm telling you, I couldn't breathe. And I mean, it's just stupid. It's this talk show, if you don't know what it is. Kenan Thompson plays DeAndre Cole, who is the host of What's Up With That, which is supposed to be a political conversation show. But instead, it turns out that every time they're about to introduce a guest or talk, they bust back into the theme song where they have backup singers and they've got, you know, saxophone player that looks like Kenny G. Fred Armisen plays him. Of course, they have the guy in the tracksuit with the perm and the doing the running man and dancing, just played by Jason Sudeikis. Who by the third time they did the sketch, Sudeikis' entrance got applause. Like, and this is a character you find out, if I remember correctly, you find out his name is Lance. When they actually, because I think in the final time they did the sketch, they actually introduced all the other periphery characters. But he just comes out in a red jumpsuit and just does the running man and dances and smiles. And I remember the third time they did the sketch, when Sudeikis made his entrance, the whole place went nuts. They're cheering for this character. But so, and then, I mean, you know, not only is that all funny, but the Lindsey Buckingham thing with Bill Hader playing Lindsey Buckingham. That is hilarious. So, but anyway, yeah, Samuel L. Jackson did, he did drop the F-bomb.
And then didn't Lindsey Buckingham sit in, the actual Lindsey Buckingham, but they didn't acknowledge it? They just...
No, well, Lindsey Buckingham came out. No, maybe he did sit in, because I know he came out at the end and played guitar, like next to Hader. Like he came out next to Hader. Maybe they did have him sit, I don't remember, but maybe. But I know he did make an appearance. He did finally make an appearance. Bill Hader's Lindsey Buckingham. How random is that? And then I mean, I love they would get like major stars. They had Robin Williams and Robert De Niro on one time. Al Gore was on one time. I mean, the first one that they did, the first person that they interview was has always been like a celebrity, except in the first What's Up With That that they did, it was Abby Elliott as a character who was an author. And so it wasn't like a real, you know, celebrity guest, although Jack McBrayer was there. Was in the middle. And just, it was genius. That was genius. How about this one? Ashley Simpson is caught lip syncing. Yeah.
Didn't she stop it?
Well, she was it because.
It was off tempo? Or
No. Because her voice started singing. Like it was a recording of her singing.
Right.
But, and she was on stage and not singing. Yeah. They played the singing track. And obviously it was her taped. It was her on tape.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and here's what it says. I remember watching it too. Jude Law was the host. The thing about it was not only was she caught lip syncing, she started dancing around and then she walked off stage and they stopped and cut to a commercial. At the end, she threw her band under the bus, which she blamed it on her band, which is just unacceptable. And then remember she also said a couple of days later, she said she had acid reflux. Reflux, not reflex. That's a different thing.
That's a different song.
That's different. Acid reflex. No, acid reflux. Anyway, here's what it says. In 2004, the singer went on Saturday Night Live to perform Pieces of Me. However, something went wrong with her audio, and rather than singing, Simpson awkwardly began dancing on the stage. The music continued to play with recorded vocals, which made it obvious to everyone that she was planning on lip syncing. I feel so bad, she says at the end. My band started playing the wrong song.
No.
And I had no excuse, so I had to do a hoedown, and I'm sorry. And then she later explained on E, I think my drummer got really excited and maybe a bit nervous, and he pressed the wrong button. I was like, okay, if I've done the hoedown thing long enough, maybe I should walk out. So she specifically now blames her drummer.
Yeah.
What a jerk.
And everyone who saw the episode
knew
what happened.
Well, she was lip-syncing. Yeah, there's no question about it. How about this one? Matthew Broderick's nude beach sketch. This is legendary. Broke the record for saying the word penis the most times. Over 40 times they say penis in this sketch. And it was a nude beach sketch. And it was unheard of to say penis on television in the 80s. This sketch has people saying penis over 40 times. It was very scandalous in the sketch. There are five guys in a nude beach played by Matthew Broderick, Dana Carvey, Kevin Nealon, Dennis Miller, and John Love. I forgot Dennis Miller was actually used in that sketch. One of the few times he was actually used in a sketch. John Lovitz, they compliment each other on their penises. The sketch led to over 40,000 angry letters from viewers. What it doesn't say here, you know who wrote that sketch?
No.
Conan O'Brien.
Ooh.
Conan O'Brien wrote the nude beach penis sketch. And he said he specifically wrote it thinking that it was going to get cut, that there was no way that they were going to air it. He wanted to see how many times he could get away with using the word penis in the sketch. Like, he specifically, that was his goal, was to not have the sketch air. Like, he was going to get cut at table read. He thought for sure at the table read, Lauren was just going to go, no way. They kept it. They did it in dress. They kept it after dress. And Conan was like, how could they keep this after dress? And then they did it live. And
Where were the censors?
I have no idea. They're usually they have a censor on set.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember the original censor for Saturday Night Live wrote a book. And Gary Lee Wright and I interviewed him years ago. He was the original censor for SNL. And he wrote a fantastic book about being at SNL for all those years and doing what the censor does and being the go-between between the network and the writers and Lauren. Bill something, I can't remember his name. He was fantastic, unbelievable guest, too. And he was an older dude, too. Like, he was older than everybody at the time. Because right. they were all, like, in their, you know, the SNL when it started, they're all, like, in their late 20s,
yeah.
you know. And
Saturday Night Live, Equal Opportunity Offender, The Uncensored Censor, written by Bill Clotworthy.
Bill Clotworthy was fantastic. Fantastic guest. Gary and I interviewed him when the book came out. So, great stuff. We have to break. He apparently wasn't around during the penis sketch that Conan O'Brien wrote. All right, we got a break here. We got weather and we got traffic, more SNL shocking moments and more if you want to jump in. It's 312-981-7200. Yeah. Triple Play Thursday, man. Yeah. 312-981-7200. Margaret in Carbondale, Huey Lewis in the news. That's Heart and Soul. You know, that video... I love the video because at one point they're like, he's trying to leave the party. He's with some chick. Huey's with some chick at a party, and they're trying to find the door to get out. And they open up a door, and one of the news is dressed up like Dracula, biting a woman on the neck. Do you remember that, Dan?
No.
He like opens up the door. They're trying to get out, and all of a sudden they look, and it's Dracula biting a girl on the neck. And then they cut back to Huey Lewis, like, oh, and he's like a scared face and closes the door.
It was a music video. What do you want?
Well, no, I loved it. I'll tell you what, though, that for the first song that we played, Dan, you played on the Triple Play Thursday, that Hip to Be Square is a great song, one of the worst, most annoying videos of all time. Seriously, do you remember the video?
No.
Dan?
I don't.
The video is a bunch of, they have these little micro cameras with fisheye lenses attached to like the guitars and the microphone and stuff. And it's just like looking up Huey Lewis down his throat and in his nose. And it's all these weird fisheye lens mini cameras that are attached to the drums and the guitar. One of the most annoying videos I've ever seen in my life. Incredibly annoying. So, all right, we get back to SNL here. 312-981-7200. We're talking about shocking SNL moments. Oh, look, the handsome Dave Enid is on TV right now. We'll see him in a little bit. It's amazing. 708 Erica says, don't forget when Jesse Jackson hosted in the 80s and they played The Question is Moot. Fantastic. That was a fantastic sketch. The Question is Moot with Jesse Jackson. It was a game show. It was so great. 708 Erica code. I remember when I was a kid, SNL had a commercial skit about anti-monster spray. It was a bug spray for monsters for kids at night. It was in the early 90s. I'm 31 now. I don't remember that. Oddly, there's something about SNL I don't remember. How did that happen? 815 says, was it Saturday Night Live where Justin Timberlake and another guy did Mother Loving? Yes. They said it was hysterical. That would be Timberlake and Andy Samberg, and it was a sequel to Blank in a Box. And they loved each other's mother. They had sex with each other's mother. And it was Susan Sarandon. Oh, man. Who was the other? Patricia Clarkson? Is it Patricia Clarkson?
Yeah.
Okay. That was really funny. 574 area code loves the Natalie Portman rap. That is fantastic. One of the best one of the best digital shorts of all time is Natalie Portman doing the hardcore rap. It's fantastic. they did a sequel to that. Natalie Portman did a sequel to the to that rap that she did. It was great. You know, there's also that episode has one of my favorite sketches. I don't know if people remember it at all, but it was when Jamba Juice was kind of at the height of its popularity. Like it just took off. And then they were starting to open up all over the place. They did a sketch about going into Jamba Juice where the people at Jamba Juice were just jumping up and down and in the happiest mood and completely out of control and screaming about how great it is to get a free boost. And, Natalie Portman was like the girl behind the counter. She never stops jumping up and down during the entire sketch. She's like, hey, welcome to Jamba Juice. What's your name? And Seth Meyers was also behind the counter working. And that was at a time when Heather and I were going to Jamba Juice. My ex and I were going to Jamba Juice pretty regularly. We would go to movies at the Landmark Century Center cinema there. At Clark and DeVersey, and on the corner of Clark and DeVersey, right on the corner there, is a Jamba Juice, or I don't know if there still is. I haven't been there in a long time, but there was a Jamba Juice there. And every single day we would go to a movie at the Landmark Century, we'd stop into Jamba Juice to get a smoothie, and I would do a shot of wheatgrass as well. And we would go in there like before the movie all the time, and they were always there. They're always like, "Hi, welcome to Jamba Juice." So that sketch with Natalie Portman jumping up and down for the entire running time of the sketch, like the happiest people. And then look, when I can't remember who it was, but she says she doesn't want a boost. And that's the only time that she stops jumping. Natalie Portman, she's jumping up and down. What kind of boost would you like today? No boost. And then they stop. And Seth Meyers stops. And they all walk over and they look at her. And they have the saddest looks on their face. And they're like, no boost, but it's free. That sketch is so funny. That was a solid episode. Natalie Portman. All right, let's see. Here's Trucker Jeff. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how are you?
All right.
Hey, yeah. Do you remember in, I think it was 79 or 80, when Paul McCartney was supposed to perform the song Coming Up, and he got busted overseas for the drugs?
He did. Yep, he got busted. He got busted in Japan for pot.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember about 10 years ago, VH1 put out that movie, John Lennon and Paul McCartney, where they were supposed to be performing on...
Well, they were. Here's the thing. The legend is that John Lennon and Paul McCartney were in New York at Lennon's place, and they were watching SNL. When Lorne Michaels did that bit where he offered the Beatles to reunite for $3,000, he had the check in front of him for $3,000. And with the classic line is, you can split it any way you want it. You can give less to Ringo if you want to. And but the legend is that McCartney and Lennon were watching it at the time and almost jumped in a cab and went to SNL, which would have been unbelievable if they showed up. And then when George Harrison came on that same season, they did a bit because George Harrison was the musical guest, and he came on, and they go outside to the hallway, and George Harrison talking to Lorne Michaels, wanting the $3,000. He's like, "I want the $3,000." He's like, "Well, you know, actually, then just it was a bit. We're not gonna. I offered it for the entire band to reunite, and Harrison wanted at least $1,000." He was like, "That's a great bit." So, all right, Elvis Costello switches songs randomly during his performance, and he switched to Radio Radio. He was supposed to play Less Than Zero. He switched to Radio Radio, and I believe he was banned from the show for a while because of that. Because you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to, you know, whatever the plan is that you're supposed to do is what you're supposed to do. And if you stray from that, there's a real good chance that you will get banned from the show, like the next guy did, Adrian Brody. Adrian Brody has forever been banned from SNL. He hosted one night, and he was introducing Sean Paul, the rapper, and he was supposed to just say, "Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Sean Paul," which is that's all the hosts say. You know, the first time they say, "Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Paul," "Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Sean Paul." That's all you're supposed to say, and that's all he was supposed to say. But he went on some weird Jamaican-accented rant, and he had a Rasta wig on and a hat, and it was just this weird, barely recognizable thing that he did, and he did it for it went on for like a minute and a half. It's supposed to take you like 2 seconds to introduce a musical guest. He went on for like a minute and a half doing this weird thing, and as soon as it was over, there was the rumors that the stage runner, the showrunner, who stands next to Lorne Michaels at some point, associate producer and assistant, stand next to Lorne Michaels. Lorne Michaels turned to him after Adrian Brody did the bit, turned to him, and he says, "That's the last time he's ever doing this show." Adrian Brody. All right. Okay, we have to break. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, we got more SNL shocking moments. We want to hear from you, too, with your SNL memories and stories and the shocking moments. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. News is next. No praise. Yeah. Amen. 815 area code requesting Brandi Clark on Triple Play Thursday, Crazy Women. Yeah! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here. How you doing, everybody? We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Andrea and Dave will be running the show this morning on the Steve Cochran Show for your 6 o'clock morning drive. 312-981-7200, talk and text. We've been talking about some shocking moments from SNL. And we have that article up on our Facebook page if you'd like to read the whole article. It's facebook.com/NickDShow. And so we've been talking about shocking moments in SNL and then opening it up to some of your favorite moments or most memorable moments in SNL history. 312-981-7200. We've talked about this one, and Esmeralda's boyfriend V knew this during a trivia. When we do, because you know we do this thing called the aggravating SNL trivia game. And this is when I ask trivia questions to Dan and to Esmeralda, who typically don't really know them, and I get aggravated because I know everything about SNL. And this grew out of the fact that nobody will play SNL trivia with me. I have Trivial Pursuit, the SNL edition. I have a Saturday Night Live trivia game at home. Nobody would ever like be like, no, we're not playing that. So I thought I would reverse it and give the questions to Dan and Esmeralda. And so there. Dan, we haven't done that in a while.
We have not.
We'll have to do that maybe next week. Bust out the old SNL trivia game, and then I can get aggravated. So, but anyway, the band Fear wrecked the stage while performing. Performances on the show tend to be low-key, and the audience doesn't usually participate. But the band Fear switched it up and got everyone to mosh for their crazy performance. The band was invited by John Belushi, who probably didn't think the band would be a problem. However, the performance ended up causing $200,000 worth of damage. Now, this whole thing about John Belushi didn't think it was going to be a problem. All right, first of all, Belushi wanted him on the show. Second of all, he wasn't on the show anymore. He wasn't a cast member anymore. Third of all, he was loaded, and he led the people in the mosh pit. So, you know, thinking that this person who wrote this, John Belushi probably didn't think the band would be a problem. He facilitated that problem, as known to do. John Belushi has been known to facilitate some issues and some problems and cause things to happen. So, yeah, it was his idea to have Fear there. He wanted them to be there. He wasn't even a cast member on the show. They get Fear to show up, and then he leads the brigade of people going completely nuts in the audience and wrecking the entire room. And also, when Chevy Chase came back to host, after Chevy Chase left after the first season, Chevy Chase came back to host in the second season. Chevy Chase, by all accounts, was a complete jerk when he came back. And Bill Murray basically was the cast member who replaced Chevy Chase after the first season. They brought in Bill Murray. So they ended up, Bill Murray and Chevy Chase ended up getting into a fist fight backstage right during the show. They got into a fist fight. And then afterwards, at the end, when they all say their goodbyes, when everybody comes out on stage and they say their goodbyes, and the cast and the crew and everybody and the musical guests, they're all out there on stage waving and saying goodbye. If they ever rerun that episode where Chevy Chase first came back to host, they're basically half of the cast is holding back Bill Murray because Bill Murray is trying to get to Chevy Chase to beat the hell out of him. And this, of course, the reason why this all happened, one, because Chevy Chase is a jerk. Two, because Belushi egged him on backstage. Belushi was like, you know, he says to Bill Murray, he's like, you know, Chevy just said you're the worst person ever, and he's embarrassed that you replaced him, you know. And so, like, Belushi's the one, and according to, I mean, I've read many accounts of this story in the book Live from New York, which is one of the greatest behind-the-scenes books ever written. It's called Live from New York, and there's an updated version that came out. Tom Shales, and I forget the co-author's name that wrote it, but Tom Shales is the co-writer of it. It is the definitive book on Saturday Night Live, and I've read it like four times. It's fantastic. And by all accounts, Belushi egged him on, and then when they got into the fist fight, Belushi was standing on the other side of the hallway laughing, like laughing and clapping. And at the end, it's fascinating. Dan, have you ever seen this episode?
No.
Did you know the story?
I had heard there was some animosity. I didn't realize it was that.
No, they had a fist fight. They both punched each other, and it was pretty much at the insistence of Belushi. He got into Bill Murray's ear, and Bill Murray went after him. And Chevy Chase, I mean, historically is a jerk. There are thousands of stories about how much of a jerk Chevy Chase is. So it's not surprising that he would have aggravated Belushi, Murray. But if you watch the ending, the final goodbyes, like they're holding Bill Murray back, Belushi's laughing. Like Belushi's like. See, he just wanted to see Bill Murray beat the crap out of Chevy Chase. By the way, Chevy Chase is like 2 feet taller than Bill Murray. Chevy Chase is a big guy. So anyway, that was funny. And I also want to mention this. I once had the extraordinary honor and privilege of interviewing Molly Shannon, who is my favorite female cast member of all time. Now, I know, you know, people are like, you're an idiot. It's Gilda Radner. And I can understand that. I totally understand it's Gilda. But personally, Molly Shannon is my favorite and makes me laugh. Everything she does makes me laugh. And I think she's hilarious and fearless and weird, and she's crazy, and I love her. And I got a chance to interview her when she came to town to promote the movie Year of the Dog, which is a great film if you've not seen it, and she's great in it. So I got to meet her, and I was very excited and got a picture with her. And if you ever see the picture of me with Molly Shannon, I got this ridiculous, like, goofy grin on my face because she was real flirty with me, too. Very, very flirty, and that got me all discombobulated. So I asked her about, you know, Saturday Night Live. Obviously, I'm going to ask her about certain things and stuff. And she's like, you watch the goodbyes at the end, right? And I'm like, of course I do. And she's like, well, that's the most important thing. Watch the goodbyes and watch them closely because you can tell a lot about either what happened that night or the relationships of the people on that stage by watching the goodbyes. And I never ever not watch the goodbyes closely every time, ever since she said that to me. I always watch them anyway, but I have a whole different angle on watching them now because you find out there's a little, you know, you can see what kind of politics or what body language, what's going on. And it's always interesting to watch the goodbyes, always, except, you know, now you got to wait till reruns because NBC cuts away. They sometimes don't show the whole goodbye. I get so angry. They like last season, for instance, here's a good one, Dan. Final episode for Moynihan, final episode for Sashir, final episode for Vanessa Bayer. They didn't show all the goodbyes. I was livid. I was sitting on my couch. It's midnight, and I'm screaming at my TV. I'm like, how? NBC, you suck! So, anyway. Yeah.
That was a big problem, though, because they always ran long, and the credits would roll at 1,000 miles an hour.
Right.
And you wouldn't. And I used to also look to see who was standing where. You've got to watch.
I'm such a geek. I rewind it and watch it over again. I'll rewind the goodbyes and watch it over again. Only I didn't used to do that until Molly Shannon told me to do it.
Yeah.
So, by the way, Molly Shannon told me when I interviewed her. I want to say this was 2007 when I interviewed her. I think it was 2007. She said, hey, you know, I'm hosting. They're asking me back to host. And this was, and she, I think she's only hosted the one time in 2007. She should host again because she's amazing. But so she's like, yeah, they're asking me to come back and host. Is there anything you want me to do? She's asking me, is there anything you want me to do? And I said, well, you got to do Sally O'Malley. You got to do, I'm 50 years old. You have to do Sally O'Malley. She's like, okay, I'll do it for you. And she did it on that show.
Dang.
Didn't dedicate it to me, but I personally was watching it going, that's because of me. She's doing right. Sally O'Malley. And it was unbelievably funny, too, because it was the combination. It was the bit where she is. I don't know. Dan, do you remember this one?
No.
She's auditioning to be a stripper at the Bada Bing. And so you've got you've got Daryl Hammond doing James Gandolfini. Fred Armisen what's his name? Junior he had the gray hair on the side of his. Oh man, I'm forgetting the names. But anyway, all those guys, and she came out to audition to be a stripper, and they're like, but you're 50, and she's like, I'm 50 years old. She does the whole, and it was hysterical, hysterical. I like to take credit for that. So, 847 area code. Richard Pryor and Chevy Chase, word association, one of the greatest sketches in the history of SNL. I don't know if you could play it now because the N-word is spoken.
Yep.
And then he said, because it's
was
like
another rough moment.
Amazing. But no, that was is an amazing sketch.
Well, yeah.
I mean, really, really brilliant. And that was at the height of Richard Pryor's you know, comedy, mm-hmm. And it was just brilliant. But the best is like the look on his face after Chevy Chase says it to him. He goes, "Dead, honky," and then he's like looking at him and he's twitching. Like, it's classic. Classic. All right, we have to break. We got weather, we got traffic, and then we'll wrap up the show and wrap up all the SNL stuff. 312-981-7200. 815 area code, Brandi Clark on Triple Play Thursday. You're only going to get two songs by her, though, this morning. It's Brandi Clark, Stripes. She's singing about women going to prison for killing people. Is that what the hell's going on? She killing men?
That was two murder ballads right
there. I know,
there from
right? Crazy women, crazy men. What the... All right. Another text, 630 area code, said, "Did you watch Fridays?" Yes, I watched Fridays. I watched Fridays. every week. And a blatant ripoff of Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. Lasted maybe three seasons.
And that's the very first time I saw Huey Lewis in the news.
Was on Fridays?
Was on Fridays. Wow. I says, "Oh, my God, what is this band?"
Well, they did. They did. You know, Larry David started out on that show. That's where Larry David started. He was a cast member and a writer on the show. And Michael Richards was on that show. Yeah. And I'm trying to remember who some of the other. Daryl Igus was on the show. Mark Blankfield. Mm-hmm. Who was the very attractive
think of the girls.
Anchor? There was not Melon. No.
Chartoff, Melanie Chartoff.
Chartoff, there you go. Very good. Yes, she was the anchor on the Friday news, and she ended up on two episodes of Seinfeld. He was Larry David is actually really loyal to the people that he started out with, giving him jobs
what
on Seinfeld and stuff.
What was the original comedy group that they came from? They came
from
he was in,
if I remember correctly, they were in the Groundlings, if I'm not mistaken. I think he was a member of the Groundlings. I'm not sure. But I know he started out in stand-up. Larry David started out doing stand-up. So did Michael Richards. Mm-hmm. But they ended up on that show. Blatant ripoff of SNL, but there was funny stuff on Fridays. Yeah. And it's also pretty legendary because of the Andy Kaufman episode. Because Andy Kaufman was on the show on Fridays and was in a sketch and broke character and wouldn't read the cue cards and did it on purpose. They actually recreated in the movie with Jim Carrey. That's actually recreated, and Michael Richards is in it. The original cast members are in it, but right. Michael Richards apparently like went nuts, and because Andy Kaufman was screwing around, he walked off the stage, picked up the cue cards, and threw them at Andy Kaufman because he wasn't reading the cue cards. Then he walked off.
I'm trying to remember that because I used to watch that fairly religiously.
Yeah, no, that was.
I thought it was funny as heck.
It's. I think the footage is out there somewhere of Andy Kaufman on Fridays, but it's kind of legendary. And they also had like really great bands on Fridays. All right, we mentioned Sinead O'Connor ripping up the picture of the Pope. Number three is Cypress Hill smoking pot on stage. There's a shock. You invite Cypress Hill on the show, and you're shocked if they're going to blow weed. The rap group is forever banned from the show after lighting up on stage. In 2003, they started off their performance with an act of rebellion. "Yo, New York City," DJ Muggs said. "They said I couldn't light my joint. You know what I'm saying? Well, we ain't going out like that." And he lit up the joint. And they were shocked by that. Oh, and like there's no marijuana smoking anywhere near Saturday Night Live. The cocaine consumption alone on Saturday Night Live in the 70s and 80s is legendary. My God. I mean, if you talk to any of the original cast members or people who were on in the early days of the show, writers, anybody, they talk about the use of cocaine on that show, and it's just insane. Yeah. What's really funny is, you know how it's always like, you know, like politicians, they want to keep all that stuff hidden. Right. You know, like Bill Clinton, "I didn't inhale,"
right,
all that stuff. What if Al Franken runs for president? He has admitted to doing 65,000 pounds of blow.
Oh,
so, what, I mean, he's a senator now, obviously, and a very well-respected politician and a well-liked guy. But, I mean, if you remember the days? Oh, no, I didn't inhale. And now you got a veteran of the original cast of Saturday Night Live who could very well run for president at some point.
There has been talk.
Oh, man. All right, how about this? Martin Lawrence gets banned for life.
Oh, well, I don't remember that.
Well, he did a very, very, very exceptionally dirty monologue to open the show, and they didn't know that he was going to do it. Like, his, you know, when they have a monologue come out, like if a stand-up comedian comes out, like Louis C.K. will come out and do just stand-up.
Right.
a lot of people, actors and actresses and stuff, they'll write bits for him to do on the monologue or sing a song or something like that. But generally, when a stand-up comedian hosts the show, they let him come out and do their material.
Okay.
Part of his monologue focused on censors and women's hygiene. The comedian said, I got to talk about some things that the doggone censors are following me everywhere about, and I wish they'd get off my blank. He then later went on to talk about meeting women complaining that they didn't wash a particular part of their body well enough. The monologue didn't sit well with the people behind SNL, so the comedian was banned for life. I remember watching it, too, going, oh, man. I mean, I didn't know he was end up going to be banned, but I just was shocked by
how long ago was it?
What he 90s, oh, 90 okay. mid 90s, I would say. Yeah. And then this one, number one, shocking moment. This is legendary. John Belushi cuts Buck Henry's head open with a sword during one of the samurai sketches. It was this stockbroker. He played a samurai working as a stockbroker. Pretty much everything went according to plan. But he was supposed to cut the sword. However, at the end, he got too reckless while flinging the sword back. He cuts Buck Henry's head. And Buck Henry kept going. They didn't stop the scene. Yeah. He kept going. And then afterwards, the rest of the he had to wear a bandage on his head for the rest of the show. He had a bandage on his head for the rest of the show. And what happened was the entire cast all put bandages on. So, like, when Chevy Chase, when they cut, the next sketch was Weekend Update.
Yeah.
And when they cut the Weekend Update, Chevy Chase had a big bandage on his forehead as a form of unity for Buck Henry. But, yeah, I mean, Belushi would go nuts with that thing. Like, it was, and that was a real sword. That wasn't like a, so, but, you know, Belushi was tended to be, you know, reckless, a little
wild.
Reckless on stage. And so he cut Buck Henry's head open. And in anniversary shows and retrospective shows, they show it happen, and then they've actually cut it down to slow motion so you can see the you can see the sword cut Buck Henry in the head. And those were great sketches, the samurai sketches.
I love the one in the deli.
The samurai deli. Yeah. There was a samurai motel, and that also featured Buck Henry came out and did that, but that also featured or Richard Pryor as a samurai. Richard Pryor came out.
That's
he had this.
Right.
It was the episode that Richard Pryor hosted. That episode that Richard Pryor hosted was legendary. Not only he did the acid, where his opening monologue was about someone dropping acid in his drink at a bar, at a party, and he forgets how to breathe. He does I forgot how to breathe. And he does that bit. They did the word association bit. They did the samurai bit, and they did the Exorcist takeoff where the foot, the bed is on my foot. The bed is on my foot. It's a legendary episode, that one. It's classic.
I got to go back and watch now.
Oh, they're great.
That's my binge now. I got to binge.
Yeah. 815 area code says the other author of the SNL book is James Andrew Miller. Right. Absolutely right. For those of you who are interested in reading, without question, the best book about SNL, and I've read a bunch of books about SNL, the definitive book is Live from New York. It's by Tom Shales and James Andrew Miller. The definitive book, and it's been updated. A few years ago, they did an updated version from the past years, and I don't know how far back. I think it goes maybe to 2009 or something, because it originally came out like in the early 2000s, and I think they did an updated version up to 2010 or something. And then it says 630 area code. I love Molly Shannon, but I think Sherry O'Terry is the best female cast member. Sherry O'Terry was great. Sherry O'Terry was hilarious. Simmered down now.
Was Sherry O'Terry the cheerleader?
One of the was her and Will Ferrell. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's great. Great. So there you go. All right. So there's all the SNL stuff. We were talking about it, shocking moments. And that whole article is on our Facebook page if you want to check it out. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, Roger, you're here tomorrow, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We'll see you then. We got a break here. The news is coming up next.